ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 6, Text 20, Translation and Commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Arayopi hi sandheya,
Arayopi hi sandheya,
Sati karyartha gaurave, Ahi mushika vaddeva, Yarthasya padavingatai, Aryopi hi sandheya, Satikar yartha gaurave. Ahimushika vaddeva, Yarthasya padavingatai. Translation of the verse. O demigods, fulfilling one's own interests is so important that one may even have to make a truce with one's enemies. For the sake of one's self-interest, one has to act according to the logic of the snake and the mouse. Purport, a snake and a mouse were once caught in a basket. Now, since the mouse is food for the snake, this was a good opportunity for the snake. However, since both of them were caught in the basket, even if the snake ate the mouse, the snake would not be able to get out. Therefore, the snake thought it wise to make a truce with the mouse and ask the mouse to make a hole in the basket so that both of them could get out. The snake's intention was that after the mouse made the hole, the snake would eat the mouse and escape from the basket through the hole. This is called the logic of the snake and the mouse. Not much fun for the mouse here. If the mouse realizes, I can buy a little time by making a hole in the basket, but the snake's going to eat me before I go. What would you do if you were a mouse in that situation? You wouldn't do anything, because mice, at least in Kali Yuga, they don't have that kind of intelligence. I thought what we might do, and we find in the Panchatantra the animals have a good intelligence. What I would do, I would say to the snake that, yeah, I can try, but you know, I'm a very weak mouse and I get tired. So let me try. And I'll do my best. And you start chewing away, chewing away, chewing away. And then say, oh, I'm really exhausted. I don't think you can get through, but let me rest and try again a little later. Then do a little more. And then say to the snake, just see if you can fit through there. And the snake says, no, it looks too small. Give it a try. And if it's not wide enough, I'll make it bigger. Then you make it just big enough so the snake gets caught in the hole. He can enter, but then gets caught, and then make another hole on the other side and get out. And you might want to give a few bites to the snake also before you go. And then what happens? The story continues. And then the cat... The mouse gets out and there's a cat waiting for him. No fun being a mouse. Krishna here is continuing recommending diplomacy. Yesterday I didn't mention because I forgot. I wasn't so intelligent. That Srila Prabhupada had specifically mentioned in a purport about being, in more than one purport, about being diplomatic for the sake of the Lord. The example is there of Sanatan Goswami, who was able to bribe his way out of prison. The prison keeper, the warden, didn't want to accept the massive bribe that he was being offered because Sanatan was offering, but he thought, well, anyway, if Sanatan escapes, obviously I'm going to be to blame. And then I'll end up in prison, or maybe I'll just be executed. But Sanatan was able to convince him by telling him, actually, you're a very saintly person, although it's not expected that a prison warden is a very saintly person. And it flattered him in various ways and gave him an excuse. And in this way, Sanatan escaped. Raghunath Das, in his dealings with the rival tax collector, rival to his father and uncle, who had arrested his father and uncle, was able to speak to the Turkish tax collector in such a way as to soften his heart, and then he made some compromise between the two parties. Ramananda Rai, also being a minister, he was able to act diplomatically with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, who had refused to see the king, Prataparudra, but Ramananda knew the art of diplomacy, so he would just, time to time, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so much against the idea of meeting Prataparudra Maharaj, that he said, well, if you say this anymore, if you propose this anymore, then I'll leave Puri altogether. You all stay here. But Ramananda didn't say anything. He didn't propose that, but time to time he would praise the qualities of the king in the presence of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and his Vaishnav qualities, the king's Vaishnav qualities. And in this way he was acting diplomatically with the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. How about that? What to speak of Rajalila, that's completely full of all politics and schemes and plots. So the diplomacy goes on. Another important point in the previous verse, if backtrack a bit, I'm going to backtrack to this because I spoke a lot about diplomacy yesterday. In the previous verse, the point of the daityas, the descendants of Diti, the demons, being favored by time. Krishna told the demigods that they are favored by time, so it's no use to try and fight them at this point, which the demigods themselves understood. There's no use to try and fight them because we are bereft of the blessings of our guru, where we're suffering from the curse of Durvasa, and they have become very powerful by, that will become revealed later in this eighth canto, they became very powerful by the blessings of Shukracharya. So they were the demigods were in a very precarious situation, and Krishna told them that it's not the right time now to try to fight them. In other words, Krishna, who could have just crushed the demons on the spot, allowed them to go on with their activities of Jagat Ahita. Shayao Jagat Ahita. That's stated by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita that demons, they perform activities which are opposite to the welfare of the world, or destructive or bad for the world, which is just the opposite of the saintly people who are described in Bhagavad Gita as Maitra. Adveshta Sarva Bhutanam Maitra Karuna Evacha. They're very friendly to all living beings, merciful to all living beings. Don't envy anyone. Don't envy any living being. Sarva Bhuta Hite Rataha. They're always engaged in activities for the benefit of the world. And we'd think that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is also engaged in activities for the benefit of the world. But sometimes for the benefit of the world, paradoxically, he allows the demons who act for the non-benefit of the world to flourish. And there are various reasons for that, which I discussed yesterday. In this world, everyone's under the influence of time. And there's nothing we can do about it. However powerful we may be, we can't stop growing old. We can't stop dying. Hiranyakashipu thought he could stop death. He wasn't able to. We may take measures to try to minimize the influence of time and by practicing yoga, eating a moderate diet, then the effects of old age may not capture us so very strongly, but we may live a very long life. But we all have to die. The blessings are given for children. Chirayu bhava, have a long life. But the real blessing would be, don't get born again. That's what I say to people when they tell me, it's my birthday today. I tell them, don't get born again. That's the best blessing. Act in this life in a way that we don't have to die. If we consider that, then all these plans of the great personalities to dominate the world or to enjoy in various ways, it's all foolishness. No one can stop the mighty influence of time. That's discussed by Kapila Dev. We'll find that in the third canto, how everyone is carried by the influence of time. In this regard, I'm going to read from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 8, text 19. Bhuta grama sa evayam bhudva bhudva praliyate ratriagame vasha partha prabhavatya haragame. Again and again, when Brahma's day arrives, all living entities come into being, and with the arrival of Brahma's night, they are helplessly annihilated. This word here, avasha, in the word-for-word translation, it's translated as automatically, and in the verse translation, it's translated as, the idea comes there of helplessly, avasha. It's not under our control. We can't what to speak of the present situation we're in. The whole universe is annihilated, and all the living beings within it. Srila Prabhupada's purport: the less intelligent who try to remain within this material world may be elevated to higher planets, and then again must come down to this planet Earth. Time, in due course of time. Tetang bhukva swarga lokang vishalam kshine punye martya lokang vishanti. They go up to the heavenly planets and then they enjoy, and then after some time is up. Your time is up. Time to go down again. During the daytime of Brahma, they can exhibit their activities on higher and lower planets within this material world. But at the coming of Brahma's night, they are all annihilated. In the day, they receive various bodies for material activities. And at night, they no longer have bodies, but remain compact in the body of Vishnu. Then again, they are manifest at the arrival of Brahma's day. Bhutva, bhutva, praliyate. During the day, they become manifest, and at night, they are annihilated again. Ultimately, when Brahma's life is finished, they are all annihilated and remain unmanifest for millions and millions of years. And when Brahma is born again in another millennium, they are again manifest. In this way, they are captivated by the spell of the material world. That's not all the purport, but I'm going to stop reading there just for now. So we're helpless before the influence of time. When we think someone may achieve something very great and think, I'm doing so well, but it's by the influence of time. That means he's performed some karmic activities by which he can become prominent, and then again by the force of time he'll be dragged down again. And when he's coming up, there's nothing anyone can do to keep him down. Just like so many dictators, Srila Prabhupada quotes the names of Hitler, Stalin, Mussolini. When they came into power, all their opponents wanted to stop them. They tried very, but there's nothing they could do to stop them. And when the time came for them to come out of power, just like Mussolini was brought into power by great popular wave and was thrown out of power and killed by another popular wave. There was nothing he could do to stop that. So he was thinking, now I'm very great, and then again, destroyed. Killed by his own countrymen. Helpless. The time... At one time, it was the time for him to be prominent. Another time, it was time for him to be killed, finished. At the present time, within our society, International Society for Krishna Consciousness, I feel like that. There are certain changes that are going on that I don't feel at all happy about, but it seems like there's just nothing we can do about it. It's just the time is... such. Maybe in course of time it will change again. We can imagine Srila Prabhupada and so many others that were so distressed at the happenings in the Gauriya Math after their spiritual master had passed away. But it was just, what could they do? There were two parties who were implacably against each other. And they weren't going to compromise, and they saw their spiritual master's movement divide, and it's gone on dividing ever since. We say Gauriya Math, but what does it mean exactly? Specifically, Gauriya Math means the temple in Bagh Bazar in Calcutta, but then so many groups and subgroups and more, there'll be more and more subgroups as time goes on, because that's the pattern that's the pattern that's come into motion now, that every time the head of one mutt passes away, then his disciples, the prominent disciples, it's already presumed that they can't get on with each other and they have to have their own mutts. And then it's so many little mutts here and there. So why does Krishna allow that? Well, we could say, why does he allow anything? Why does he allow the material world? Why does he allow Kali Yuga? People have desires to fulfill, and Krishna allows that. He doesn't force anyone to do what he wants. He lets us know what he wants, but he doesn't force anything. And then he gives the opportunity for people to do bad things. What to speak of our movement, we may say, why did Krishna allow the Mughals to invade India and destroy so many temples and kill so many Brahmins? I gave a whole talk about that once. Why did he allow that? Well, there's a time in Kali Yuga, just before Krishna came to this world. Kamsa was killing Brahmanas, suppressing them, stopping sacrifices. Hiranyaka, at one point in time, that was going on. But there is reality beyond time. And I'll go now to text 20 of the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna's just described in several verses the nature of time within this material world, talking about Sahasra Yuga Paryantam Ahayad Brahmano Viduhu, the day and night of Brahma, so long. And then again says at the end of Brahma's day, everything is annihilated, and again they come into being. And then Krishna, in text 20, says, Parastasmatu bhavonyo vyakto vyaktat sanatamaha yasa sarveshu bhuteshu nashyatsu navinashyati. Yet there is another unmanifest nature which is eternal and is transcendental to this manifested and unmanifested matter. It is supreme and is never annihilated. When all in this world is annihilated, that part remains as it is. So Krishna, Bhagavad Gita, he's pointing us to that place beyond the material, beyond the material modes of nature, beyond birth and death, beyond time, to the spiritual world. But at the same time, within Bhagavad Gita, he gives a lot of information and discussion about the nature of this material world. He's pointing us to the spiritual world, but there's so much discussion of the three modes of material nature. There's discussion of demigods and sacrifices to please demigods. There's a discussion of the demons. There's so much discussion of this material world, because we're here in this material world and we have to understand the nature of this material world in order to live in it in a manner that we can prepare ourselves to get out of this material world and go to the world beyond time. We may wonder, well, in this verse or in this section of Bhagavatam that we're reading, how is Krishna doing anything to help people go beyond birth and death? He's getting very involved with the demigods in their material activities. He tells them, fulfilling one's own interest is so important. What is that self-interest? It's completely materialistic. And Krishna's talking about that. Actually, in the demigods and the demons, they're both in the category of Nate Vidu Swartagatim Hi Vishnu. They don't know that their real self-interest is in pleasing Vishnu. The difference is the demigods sometimes might say that, yes, ultimately you are Supreme Vishnu, whereas the demons don't want to accept it. Vishnu Bhakta Smrito Daiva Asuras Tadvipariyaha. The demigods accept that Vishnu is supreme and the demigods don't. That's the difference between them. Or even if the demons accept Vishnu as supreme, they don't accept him to be supreme, the supreme personality of Godhead. They say, yeah, there's Indra and Brahma and Shiva and Vishnu is on top of them all. But anyway, if Vishnu comes, we'll kill him. They think he's a mundane personality. So Krishna is here telling them how to fulfill their own interests. Why should he do that? Why doesn't he tell them to, just forget all this nonsense. Let the demigods have their heavenly planets and you just go off and do tapasya. And tapo divyam putraka yena sattvam shudyat yasmad brahma sokyam tu anantam. Just become self-realized. They're not ready for that. So Krishna instructs them according to their level. There is, of course, in the, which is it, Chandogya Upanishad, the narration of Brahma giving Atmagyan, knowledge of the soul, to Indra and to Virochana. But for Virochana, who is at that time the head of the demons, for him, he got stuck on the level of thinking, I am this body. And Indra got the Atmagyan, but in his practical life, he's Indra. He has a very powerful material position and a very weighty material responsibility. And by nature, he has a strong desire to enjoy this material world, but not in a demoniac way, in a manner which is favoring the order of the universe, Varnashram. So Krishna takes the sides of the demigods against the demons so as to uphold the universal system whereby people can gradually come to him. But really, this whole Bhagavatam is not meant for learning how to live very happily in this material world, which Vishnu is now teaching to the demigods, or speaking to them as if That really was the highest goal of life. In one sense, he was cheating them. But that will be seen gradually, although he appears to be talking in a materialistic way. Gradually, that will be seen as the pastime unfolds, how he cheated Bali Maharaj, and in this way demonstrated the pure devotional character of Bali Maharaj, and in this way shamed the demigods, who were so interested in enjoying the material world and getting back their property. And Bali Maharaj, he was completely detached from all of that. He took over the heavenly planets, because that's what you do if you're the head of the demons, you attack the demigods, and this time he was successful. But he wasn't personally attached. He was very attached to Lord Vishnu. And Lord Vishnu, who is the, in this avatar, Vamanadeva, he's Upendra, the younger brother of Indra. He left Indra and went to live with Bali Maharaj. So he by this pastime, Vishnu will eventually demonstrate to the demigods that he's really interested in his devotees, whether they're designated as a demigod or a demon. He'd prefer to live with Bali than with his own kinsmen, the demigods in the heavenly planets. And the demigods were so anxious to get the kingdom, and Bali didn't care for it at all, but he cared for Vishnu. So in this way, Krishna here is by instructing the demigods how to get back their kingdom, make a truce, and then you'll get the nectar, and then you'll become strong, and this and that. But it's all, cheating them by not giving them the highest knowledge. But he will demonstrate to them that the highest truth is pure devotion to him. So consideration of time, we may have so many plans, how I will become big, I will enjoy myself, I will live very comfortably. But we should know from here in Bhagavatam, from the very beginning, that Krishna, he's always the biggest, and we're always small in relation to him, past, present, and future. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the whole Bhagavatam is aimed not at how we can live happily in this world, but understand there's no happiness actually within this material world, and we have to connect with Krishna beyond time. The material circumstances we're in might be very unpleasant, or they might be very pleasant, or they might be in between. Anishtam, ishtam, mishram cha. There are three basic kinds of material conditions: undesirable, desirable, and mixed. But Trividham Karmano Bhavet, what's the next line? Bhavatya Tyaginam Pretya. Bhavatya Tyaginam Pretya, Natu Sanyasinam Kvachit. But for those who are detached from this material world, they're not affected by desirable conditions, undesirable conditions, or mixed conditions, because they live in a different world. They apparently living here, but they don't really live here at all. I saw some quote by the wife of William Blake, a great English mystic. She said, "I don't really know my husband because he doesn't live in this world. He's always in paradise. He's always in thoughts of God." So she can't really relate to him. Maybe something like Tukaram's wife. She couldn't relate to him. "Why can't you just be a normal human being?" "I don't want to be a normal human being." He wanted to be with Krishna. So this Bhagavatam, this gives us the opportunity to connect ourselves with the eternal world beyond birth and death, and not get involved in all this nonsense of how we can get on top and how I can enjoy and how I can kill my enemies, if I can't kill them at the present time, at least we'll make a truce and then we'll see what to do later. Bhagavatam is beyond that. We may say, well, what about our movement? What are we going to do? Yeah, well, we should try to do what we can. Just like Jatayu tried to stop Ravana. It's not exactly the same situation, but the point is that we try to do what is right, and if we can't, then at least we tried. But we should know that, just like the Bhaktivinoda Thakur's mission, most of his followers, as we learned from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they didn't really understand him at all. There's this amazing exchange between Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and one elderly man, who the elderly man said, "Yes, yes, I knew Bhaktivinoda Thakur very well." And he said, "No, no, you never knew him well." "No, no, I saw him, I met him so many times. You never saw him in your life. What are you talking about? So many, I went to his home, he treated me very nicely. You were there so many times. How can you say I never saw him?" Because he saw him as just a pious man. He didn't know him. He saw him as a member of the Bhadralok, the emerging middle class of Calcutta, a pious man like this. He didn't surrender to him. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati carried forward the mission, and most of it, he started his own mission. There was already an organization Bhaktivinoda Thakur had started, the Navadvip Dham Pracharini Sabha, and that was an organization that he was overseeing. It was meant for preaching. It's the Sabha, the organization for preaching about or from Navadvip Dham. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati started his own organization. Then Prabhupada started his own organization. But they're all on the platform. The whole idea is to bring us to the platform beyond time. Therefore, Bhagavatam, we study. Whatever may happen that we don't like, or may not happen that we wished would happen, Krishna is always the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we can always connect by chanting His holy names, by studying the Bhagavatam. This is the same message that Tene Brahma Hridaya Adi Kaviye. Krishna spoke to Brahma, Brahma spoke to Narad, Narad spoke to Vyas, Vyas spoke to Madhva, Vyas spoke to Shukdev, Shukdev spoke to Parikshit, and then Suta spoke to Shaunaka and the other rishis. We have in the Bhagavatam that Maitreya spoke to Vidura, Krishna spoke to Uddhava, Kapila spoke to Devahuti. It's the same message that we're getting, that's coming down. Evam parampara praptam. It is received in disciplic succession. The present time is a very dangerous time. Kali Yuga. Kalim sattva harang pung sam. This Kali Yuga, it takes away all the good qualities of human beings. It's a very dangerous age. But those who are fortunate, yagyai sankirtana prayer yajanti hi sumedasa, they can worship the yagya purush, the personality of the sacrifice, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by sankirtan yagya in this Kali Yuga. But there isn't much time. Prayanal payusha sabya. People in this age, they don't have very long lives. Kalava smin yuge janaha. Manda sumanda matiyo, manda bhagya yupudruta. Life is short and the consciousness is not suitable for spiritual understanding. And the circumstances are not suitable for spiritual understanding. And therefore, the rishis at Naimisharanya, they said to Suta Goswami, you studied all the scriptures, you know, with all the Puranas and the Upaveda, you know everything. But we don't have much time. We're in Kali Yuga, and we need a formula. We don't have time to read all that stuff. What to speak of the people who are the people in general. So just tell us what's the essence of all of that? What's the essence of all of these things? And then Suta Goswami recited Srimad Bhagavatam, which Shonaka already indicated that they already knew that we have to hear about Krishna, and he knew that Suta Goswami was the right person to give that knowledge of Krishna. He gave the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is Sarva Veda Itihasa Nam Saram Saram Hi Udahritam, the essence of all the Vedas and the whole corpus of Vedic knowledge, the essence of the essence, the cream of the cream, creme de la creme, is the Srimad Bhagavatam. Of course, that's also not very small. therefore, we have the process, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, daily hear Srimad Bhagavatam. It may give some valuable advice also for how to live in this world. But that's just like here, the snake and the mouse logic. There are so many, this must be what, ahimushika nyai, the snake and the mouse. There are so many sarpa raju nyai, the logic of the snake and the rope, which is concerned with epistemology and how the senses can fool us. You may see a rope and think it's a snake when it's not. Or we might see a snake and think it's a rope, which is more dangerous. There are so many huge body of Vedic knowledge which gives us knowledge of how to live in this world. There's astrology and gemology and geology, how to fight in this world, how to be diplomatic in this world. So much knowledge is there, but Srimad Bhagavatam points to the essence. Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And therefore we should surrender to him. So really this instruction that Krishna is giving to the demigods, that how to make a truce with your enemies, we might find that useful in some wisdom that we can incorporate in our lives if we find ourselves in a situation that is unfavorable to us. But it's not the essence of Bhagavatam that one should pursue one's material self-interest. Rather, one should know that one's self-interest is in Vishnu. So we have here in Bhagavatam some instruction which is not Vedyam Vastavam, the actual essence of the Vedas. Of course, no doubt our acharyas, they could, by analyzing this, they could find out how it is actually to the highest level, but at least at face value, and that's how the demigods understood it, it is knowledge of how to be diplomatic to fulfill one's own interests, which devotees, they may do that because their interest is in Krishna consciousness. So for furthering the Krishna consciousness movement, one may be diplomatic. I'll give another example from Srila Prabhupada's pastimes. I gave some yesterday. that Srila Prabhupada wanted to sign a legal agreement about the Bombay land with Mrs. Nair, after Mr. Nair, who had been giving so much problems to Srila Prabhupada, the previous landlord, after Mr. Nair had died, and Mrs. Nair, fearing the mystic effect of Srila Prabhupada, that he might just overwhelm her, she brought with her a yogi who was supposed to counteract the mystic power of Prabhupada. And they were sitting and talking, and Prabhupada said, Prabhupada yawned, and the yogi said, "Oh, Swamiji, you must be feeling very tired." And Prabhupada said, "Yes, I think." Yeah, and the yogi said, "Yes, sir, you should take a little rest and we can talk later." So Prabhupada went off, and the yogi, as Prabhupada thought, also took rest. And in the meantime, Prabhupada, with the yogi resting, found Mrs. Nair and negotiated with her and got what he wanted. Prabhupada was expert in that way. But if we just study Prabhupada in that way, how he was materially so expert, then we'll miss the essence. Just like this Sri Sri has given an example of someone who, even in old age, he did something. So it's a great example for all old people. Take inspiration from Prabhupada, how in your old age you can get out in the world and do some things, make your name known. But that, it's an appreciation of Prabhupada, but in the wrong way. It's not that Prabhupada thought, "Now I'm old, let me do something so that my name goes down in history." We should take the essence that Prabhupada taught us to surrender to Krishna. That's what we should learn from him. Not that I'm old, I'm going to go out and make a revolution and throw out the government and make myself the dictator or any such thing. I'll go and start a spiritual movement. But what are you going to start? You don't know anything about anything spiritual. You have to learn from Prabhupada. So it was an appreciation without understanding what the purpose of life is. So I appreciate, oh yes, Prabhupada, yes, he was a good scholar, he was a nice man, he was a good cook, he smiled nicely. Okay, but what's the essence of Prabhupada? The essence is that prema bhakti jaha hoite abidya vinasha jate. The essence is that he gives pure love of Krishna and destroys ignorance. So, essence seekers. We should be essence seekers. It appears that the demigods weren't essence seekers, so Krishna gave them what they wanted, which was a means to fulfill their material self-interest by counteracting the influence of the demons. Hare Krishna. So what do you want to be, a snake or a mouse? Which would you prefer to be? I'd rather be a sparrow than a snail. There's a song like that. What's the use of being a sparrow or a snail or a snake or a mouse or anything? Unless you're in Krishna's pastimes. Would you rather be prime minister or just someone ordinary living in Salem? Actually, for most people, they wouldn't be fit as the prime minister. They'd be terrible for them. They just wouldn't be able to handle the pressure. It's not an easy job, no doubt. And to every day in the newspaper and in the TV have people criticizing you. Of course, if in the Lok Sabha, criticizing you every day. If an ordinary person criticizes you, they get thrown in jail. That's something new in India. Don't criticize the Prime Minister. But yeah, a lot of pressure. And you have to perform all the time. Anything goes wrong, they blame you. So even materially, to desire to be great, people don't know how much difficulty comes with that. Srila Prabhupada gave the example of Mahatma Gandhi. He couldn't sleep at night because wherever he went, there were crowds of people around him, and they would come and chant, Jai Mahatma Gandhi, and he couldn't get any rest, couldn't get any peace, because he was a star. He was so popular. Maybe when they put him in prison, he got some peace. There might have been a break for him, but otherwise it was not easy. Hare Krishna, any question about this, please? Question, comment, anything? Yeah, Chitta Hari.
Guru Maharaj, can we example of Vasudeva's situation when he was dealing with Kamsa?
Vasudeva is another example. Yeah, he was very diplomatic. He said to Kamsa that, anyway, the Devaki's not going to kill you, so there's no use to kill Devaki. It's her eighth son will kill you. And I promise I'll bring every son to you, one after the other, as they're born. So that he was buying time to immediately, if Devaki was killed, then that's what he was trying to prevent. He couldn't have, even if theoretically Kamsa had been able to kill Devaki, he wouldn't have been able to escape anyway, because it's just like the eight sons of Devaki were originally the eight, who was that? Sons of Marichu, who laughed at Brahma, and then they became sons of Hiranyakashipu. Brahma cursed, they laughed at Brahma because, or they criticized him when Brahma chased his own daughter, and then Brahma cursed them to become demons, and they became the sons of Hiranyakashipu. And then, because they didn't follow their father, he cursed them to, I can't remember exactly, it's all very complex, to get born, and then they'd get killed. So that happened one after that. And eventually so it would have happened, if not in this lifetime, in another lifetime. Then they became sons of Kalanemi, yeah. And then Kalanemi was born as Kamsa. I can't remember exactly, yes, I didn't read it for a long time. It's all very complex. Who can speak on Mahabharata stories? They have to have a very good memory of all the details. You get one story within another story within another story within another story, and they're all very complex stories. Hare Krishna. Anything else? Vasudevam Sutam Devam. Do you know that verse? Did you learn that as a child? It's popular among the smartest in Tamil Nadu. Kamsa Chanura Maratanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagadgurum. Composed by Shankaracharya. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyavacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha.